Living in a scientific age, we need citizens who know enough about science to make intelligent decisions about what they do. We've used science to prolong life, to increase security and happiness. But it can also be used for destruction. Are we going to use it constructively?
Probably not.
Never.
It'll be up to you, and you too.
So do you know what size is the only size of drink that you can get in North Korea?
What size is that?
Supreme liter.
That was an Arnold compilation in celebration of the VHS copy of Terminator 2 I found at the Goodwill downtown before I stopped.
Was that from Total Recall?
I think it's from everything. Explodes? And now that I'm seeing it again, I think it's somebody's dubbed it, dubbing that in, because I don't. There's no way that. So they just have clips of him from everything, and they don't match with the picture. Well, yeah. Whatever. Okay. Well, welcome to another episode of the Mark and Todd Cast. I am one of your hosts, Todd Workhoven. With me, as always, is Mark. How are you, Mark?
I'm really well today.
Good.
Oh, hi, Mark.
I forgot to play that beforehand. I usually play it.
Did you see that clip I sent you of the Star Wars dubbed in with Johnny Wiseau?
With Tommy Wiseau.
Tommy Wiseau.
Johnny.
Johnny.
So I was standing right before recording. I was standing outside on your sidewalk, basking in the sun like a lizard, because it's finally nice again after it being super hot. It was so funny because Portland has been bitching and moaning about so much rain for so long, and then it got like it.
It got warm. It got 80 warm degrees.
It was
Thursday.
92 on Thursday down in West Lynn.
What?
Yeah, it was crazy. And so, like, all week long, I kept thinking, well, now it's too hot. Just normal temperature. And the next day, well, now it's too cold.
And it was rainy.
And it was raining.
Wow. Yeah.
So I have a question. I wrote Todd's dumb question in here to start this out. So I was watching a documentary on the Grand Coulee Dam. It was on the PBS app on my Apple TV. And they were showing the motors and the generators. And when you're creating electricity like that.
Yes.
Where, and it's scrubbing the copper against the whatever, and the electron is coming off. Why don't you run out? Like, those generators have been in Grand Coulee Dam for 80 years now. Why doesn't copper become not copper if it keeps losing so much? Like, where is that electron coming from, I guess, is what I'm asking. Does that make sense? Because when you take things away from something, like, it can't be that same thing.
Right. And so there is a positive and a negative side of every electrical equation.
Okay.
And in this case, the negative side would be earth ground. And so you literally have a big pipe physically in the ground of the earth that has an unlimited supply of electrons.
That doesn't make any sense.
It absolutely does. So what you're doing when you...
This is where we keep all the electrons.
This is where we keep all the electrons. So there's no physical scraping. It's all electrical.
Right, right.
So you've got a magnet traveling through or a conductor traveling through a magnetic field, or a magnetic field traversing a conductor. And that forces electrons from that copper to be moved.
So the copper is a conduit as opposed to the originator of.
Right. In the moment, it's just got a pool of electrons that get pushed away.
So it is coming
leaving
from somewhere.
A vacuum of electrons that then Earth says... abhors.
I thought of that joke again. Even Earth abhors you. Vacuum. That was going to be my comic strip thing. I was going to draw a picture of a little vacuum being bullied on the school ground, having the bullies saying, "Even nature abhors you,"
which is totally solid. And so then Earth ground provides the unlimited supply of electrons into that system to continue on.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. I couldn't quite.
Not a stupid question.
Couldn't quite
at all.
Figure that out. All right. Yeah. Well. I need to start our. I always forget our wonderful little soothing teletype. So let's get into some news here.
Yes.
There's been one more study that reconfirms that the MMR vaccine is not linked to autism. So the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine is not linked to development of autism spectrum disorders, even among children considered to be at risk, a new study finds. So it was with 100,000 children, and they decided once again for all that there was no link, and it's all because of a 1998 study that claimed to find a connection between the MMR vaccine and the autism spectrum disorder that was later debunked and roundly debunked. And I think that guy no longer practices medicine, but all from that one study, all of this vaccine stuff came out of. Isn't that crazy?
Yes, it's absolutely crazy. And the problem is, when your brain latches onto something that it says, yes, this is logical, A plus B equals C, and I get it, and I have made that conclusion with you, and I confirm that conclusion, no amount of other evidence
right.
can dissuade you because you have come to a conclusion.
Right.
And
it's harder to unlearn something.
It totally is.
From to someone.
And
Yeah. Anyway, so that once again has been reconfirmed that there is no link between the vaccines and autism. What is that story? Root, a bank for developers.
Root.
That must be a you story.
It is a me story. So there's a bank in South Africa that's starting up that is, it's not there for functionality. It's actually kind of a side project of a bank that's opening as its own entity. So it's being funded by a bank and being developed by a tech company. And basically, it's called Root and in South Africa. And it's a bank for software developers. And so it's an open framework. They have what are called APIs. The application programming interfaces are just parts of your program that, using authentication and you could build a mobile app that interacts with your bank account
mm-hmm.
to do things with.
Okay.
And so most banks like Bank of America and everything, there's no access to the transactional things that you can do with your bank. You can use other systems that withdraw and deposit into your bank, but you're not directly interacting
right,
with
okay.
your bank account.
I see.
And so this is an open architecture for access to your bank account, which sounds stupid and terrifying. But, you know,
okay,
as long
even
as...
when I catch on to the how could this go wrong, I think we all need to rethink our plans.
And, you know, there's...
Said CEO Lex Luthor.
There are interfaces to other banks, like, you know, Bank of America has a system for depositing and withdrawing money from. And so there are already systems kind of like this. This one's more publicly documented and available to developers. And so examples that they put out were like send transaction data to a personal Google Sheet in real time to make budgeting easy. So instead of using their web interface to track all of your data,
right,
you could listen electronically or programmatically to any transaction that happens in your system and update another app, like Google Sheets, a spreadsheet program, in real time. So your spreadsheet is automatically populated directly from your bank, and you haven't used a third party to do
okay.
that. And so it's, I just thought it was... I thought it was interesting that a tech company and bank are kind of opening up the kimono and saying, we aren't being prescriptive about what you can do with our system. We are opening it up to allow you to see what happens.
Interesting.
With technology and software and applications and websites and things that could have application right. that and seeing what happens.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
That's Root.
That's Root. A bank for developers. I'm kind of hoping that's their slogan, but I don't think that is.
That was the title of the article. So
I came across what is my for now my favorite new animal, which I forgot to put in there, and it is a fish called the Acanthus armatus, which is also called the, and everything else from here on is why I like it, because it's like everything about it just sounds mean. The not the fish, but the description of the fish. So okay. It's called the bony-eared ass fish.
Yes.
And it's a species of cusk eel found in the subtropics. It holds the record for the smallest brain to body weight ratio of all vertebrates. So it is a vertebrae fish.
Huh.
And there's one, they have, the bodies of the ass fish are soft and flabby. And they're practically see-through because they're so pale. So that made me crack up today.
Just everything about that.
The bony-eared ass fish, your small brain, and your bodies are soft and flabby.
Sounds like everybody on Reddit.
Exactly.
Including myself.
Including myself, yes.
I'm grouping, an avid Reddit.
Grouping ourselves in there. I have the smallest head-to-body ratio.
Physically.
Of all land mammals. Moving on in food meat news, lab-grown meat is coming soon to supermarket shelves. So if the Silicon Valley food tech startup has its own way, did I pronounce that right? Silicon? Okay. Silicon Valley. Go back and forth in my head. Silicon.
If it's got an E on the end, it's silicone.
I know. But it's like how I can't say nuclear without having to say think about it like five or six times to see
nuclear.
Right. Nuclear. Yeah. Anyway. So this lab-grown meat, which includes chicken, duck, and beef, will on supermarket shelves in the next 5 years. So the co-founder of a place called Memphis Meats wants to be out there by 2022. They created the world's first chicken strip from animal cells following their animal-free meatball debut in 2016. Essentially, we're taking a number of animal cells, giving them clean and nutritious food, and then we watch them grow into a muscle. We harvest that muscle and then cook it. The whole process from start to finish takes about 6 weeks, depending on the texture. The company's main goal is to raise capital, blah, blah, blah. The story doesn't really give us any new information except for this, which is why I kept this paragraph. So there's a quote from this guy who is the CEO and co-founder of Beyond Meat, another new startup company. And the name Beyond Meat really cracked me up on that one.
There's a...
there's a pile of jokes on the floor and you're overwhelmed. It's the tyranny of choice.
Are they really gonna beat the meat?
My slide whistle's way over there. Thank you. They'll never know that wasn't the actual slide whistle. Moving on to Clyde Lewis news. Hundreds of birds were found dead in Galveston, Texas. An entire flock crashed into the American National Insurance building. They collected 395 dead birds, mostly warblers and orioles. The Audubon Society said the bird kill was likely caused by a combination of bad weather and bright lights. They believe one day night storm caused the flock to fly lower to the ground, and they got distracted by the bright lights. So can you imagine 400 birds flying into your building? That would be horrifying.
Yeah.
Have you? Oh, well, yes. I'm sure you have had a bird fly into the window while you're like sitting at home or something like that.
I have in a restaurant once.
Oh,
there was
really?
One that, actually we had exited the restaurant and next door, I heard the thunk,
yeah,
and then there's literally the imprint of the bird on the window.
That happened at our advertising agency,
I think so.
Do you remember that? And it was like that full, like, beautiful beautiful wingspan of a pigeon or something like that.
Oh, and you're literally looking at their last moments of life.
Yeah. There was one at one of the houses I worked, a little sparrow flew into whatever and conked itself out, and it laid motionless on the mat for like 20 minutes. And I'd read something on probably on Imgur or something like that, someone's little story of saving a bird. And so I just left it there, made sure the cat didn't eat it. And sure enough, about 20 minutes later, I kind of poked at it and it popped over and flew away. And it's so funny.
I sent you the video of the lady doing CPR on the little pigeon. But the neck was broken.
It just flopped over. She set it back down on the ground.
Oh. She did mouth-to-beak resuscitation and everything.
I know. I have a friend who did mouth-to-snout resuscitation on her little tiny dog, and it worked. That term always cracks me up, mouth-to-snout.
Mouth-to-snout.
All right, moving on to hashtag Mark's president. At the FDA, TVs are now turned to Fox News and cannot be switched. So CBS News has confirmed that an email was sent to researchers at the FDA Center for Biological Evaluation and Research responding to efforts to change the channel on the internal television screen. The email was sent to inform the research of the, quote, reason for the change from CNN to Fox. It states that the decision came from the Trump administration. Quote, the reason for this is from the email. The reason for the change is that a decision from the current administration administrative officials.
Right. The administrative officials of the current administration
had requested that all monitors under our control display Fox News. They apologized for the inconvenience, adding, quote, I am unable to change any of the monitors to any other news source at this time. The FDA spokesman said there was no directive or memorandum, but...
How can that be a thing? Because I went to a gym once that had that situation. it was called the Oxford... fitness facility
and throw around medicine
Vancouver,
balls
Washington. Right.
You grow your handlebar mustache.
Right. And it was just really old dudes in the locker room, just unapologetic.
Having locker room, a lot of locker room talk.
With their foot up on the chair. Just gray hair and stuff. It was terrible. And, but up in the area, they've got the big screen and it's just Bill O'Reilly yelling at people.
Yeah.
And just like,
I was just thinking about that this last week, how, I mean, I'm glad I just kind of fell out of the habit of watching television in general, but I never really could watch cable news just because I can't stand people just shouting at me all day long. I just don't understand it. All right. But moving on from Mark's America or Mark's president to Mark's America. Fake service dogs are becoming a problem. 19 states make it a crime to dress up a pet and pretend it's a working service dog. Getting caught may result in a misdemeanor, but the laws don't seem to be dissuading fraudsters. Currently, there is no national registry to track service animals. Meanwhile, Mark, scam artists online are selling fraudulent certifications, ID cards, and vests, which owners, Mark, can easily purchase.
Okay, we'll talk about this.
One example found a video of an owner pushing her three pet dogs inside a shopping cart, claiming to be a service dog.
Okay, I'm gonna get something.
An owner wears sunglasses and pretends to be blind so the pet dog can pretend to be a guide dog. And now Mark is leaving. Mark. Quote, it's just so selfish. Why would you do that? Questioned Sergeant Mike Garvey, who has to jump through hoops to prove his dog is an actually trained service dog.
Okay.
He's an Afghanistan veteran. He was shot twice. He's having problems proving that his dog.
There's.
I'll read that again. It's just so selfish. He said, why would they do that? Says guy who was shot twice in Afghanistan.
Okay.
Who has to jump through hoops to prove his dog is a real service dog.
Absolutely.
Monsters.
They are monsters. And I know what you're alluding to. So.
Oh, am I so transparent?
I know. So Isabel Pug, I wanted to bring Isabel Pug to the office. The office, the owner of the office, the owner of our company also wanted Isabel to be there. The lease technically said no pets. Mm-hmm. And so the owner was concerned that that it would be a problem if the owner of the building came around. Uh-huh. And so...
So, I mean, the only thing to do is to...
So there's two types of classifications. One is service animals. Uh-huh. And service animals do a... like they have a job.
Yes, they have been specifically trained for...
They've been specifically trained.
A long time.
And it is, I believe, a federal crime...
Maybe it's at least
it is a crime.
Yes,
to impersonate a service animal, and right. So service animals get to go anywhere.
Yeah,
do anything. Now there's another classification called emotional support dog. Now an emotional support dog.
Picture you holding it. Emotional support dog.
So an emotional support dog is not a service animal at all. Is not required to be allowed in anywhere or do anything or get you past anything.
Right. And so what you're holding is a very official looking red vest for the dog that says emotional support dog with a nice official looking patch.
Yes.
So that anyone who doesn't know wouldn't have any idea that's different than a service animal.
It doesn't even say service animal. Like, why would you think that?
How could I make such a leap in logic when a dog is wearing a vest that says that I'm a support animal?
So an emotional support animal, it is a thing.
For when you're triggered about being asked about your emotional support dog.
About my service dog. And so emotional support dogs, there's two situations that they can be used in. To kind of leverage systems, if you will. One is apartments or rental properties that don't allow pets. If you get a prescription from your doctor, I'm being serious. If you get a prescription from your doctor, you can have an emotional support animal. There's no there's no official certification or anything about being an emotional support animal. It's just a thing. You can have an emotional support pig. There are real emotional support pigs.
Oh, yeah. You see them on airplanes all the time. Like someone to bring
airplanes is the other thing, right? Oh. And so airplanes, you can't bring your pet on unless it's an emotional support animal or a service animal, which is a totally different classification.
Right. Of course.
So your emotional support, and you need, in those two cases, you need a doctor's prescription. And that's neither of what I was doing. We had
a lady.
I'm a war veteran, by the way.
Yeah, were you shot twice in Afghanistan? Like horrified.
You can't
veteran
ask me that. Sergeant thanks Mike to Garvey. The American Disabilities Act, you cannot ask me those questions legally. which is also true. And so, Isabel Pug would wear this into the office,
and it's got a handle on it, and you would always carry her up like as if she were luggage, which is pretty great.
She loved it, and so this just dissuaded any confusion about her role at the office. She was there to support us emotionally.
Sure, sure.
And she
and no one was allowed to ask questions because you're not allowed to ask veterans anything, apparently, about their lives.
That's very true. Nobody ever asked. And if they would have, I would have told them about my distinguished service in
that's
the military.
Right.
And so I agree. Being fraudulent about being a service animal is deplorable.
Monsters.
Yes.
Monsters. All right, one last story. This is hot off the presses, which I guess this is from 2016, but it's just hot across my inbox or whatever. So gorillas make up little food songs while they eat. According to an article by the New Scientist, yes, a German scientist working in the Congo discovered a fun new fact about gorillas. They hum and even sing during mealtimes. Food-related calls have been documented in chimpanzees and bonobos, but never in gorillas. But far from just vocalizing, gorillas appear to generate two different types of sounds while eating. Let me turn my teletype off here so we can listen to the gorillas sing. One of them is a steady, low-frequency tone that sounds rather like a sigh of contentment or hum. So that is Mark.
I get that.
Here's the actual sound.
Wow.
So that's okay. So surprisingly,
yeah.
Not ever having heard that before, you did an amazing approximation.
Okay.
There's another series of short, differently pitched noises which resemble a random melody. So why don't you try that? Okay, so let's see. Let's see if we can match that here.
Too far
so
off.
It's hard to see, but yeah, that is me when I'm walking around, because I'm doing that old man thing of just just like humming atonally with no
direction,
and with no direction. And I realized another old man thing that I'm starting to do. One of the new one of my new kids that I'm working with that has some disabilities, he's nonverbal, and so I was picking him up from school and I realized that to converse and stuff like that, that I was doing the old man thing of just saying things out loud that were in front of me. Like, oh, all these flowers are finally in bloom. Last week they were.
I do that all the time. I do that when I'm driving.
Nice. Yes.
I do that when I'm driving to Nick. He doesn't seem to be annoyed by it.
He's probably tuned it out.
He's probably tuned it out. It's like,
he doesn't hear that frequency.
And I'll just read titles of stores.
Yes.
Just like, odd.
Bamboo Garden.
Southwest Camera. It's like.
That's so funny.
I'm there. And anyway. I get that.
So yes, those were the two gorilla little food songs. So
we want to cut over to Brian the Unipiper Kid?
We do, and I don't know if we'll talk about it with him, but we noticed earlier that he was mentioned in Alaska Airlines magazine.
Yes.
So let's see if he brings that up. If not, he was mentioned in Alaska Airlines magazine.
So
we'll go to Brian, we'll come back, and we'll talk a little bit about IBM's Watson.
Yes.
Hello, is this the Unipiper to whom I'm speaking?
You got it.
Oh, and I even waited the proper amount of time for all the work.
Hi, Brian.
Hey, how's it going, Mark?
It's going well.
Good. Do you guys have a good holiday season?
Did we have a holiday? Oh, we had May the 4th. Is that our holiday season?
Yeah, yeah, it was May the 4th, Cinco de Mayo, Revenge of the 5th.
Oh,
May
that's 5th. Right. What was the 6th?
Revenge of the 6th?
Some people say Revenge of the 5th. Some people say Revenge of the 6th.
So what kept you busy on May 4th? I know you had to turn a lot of people appearances down.
Yeah, I was gonna have to ask you guys what I missed in Portland, because I have not been in the state. I spent the last week in Los Angeles, you know, the place where they have a ice cream shop called Salt and Straw, and they have crazy donuts from a place called Voodoo Donuts.
How different that must be.
Yeah. It's funny. I was talking to someone who lives down there, and they were talking about how they really like Salt and Straw, and they haven't checked out this new place called Voodoo Donuts yet, but they heard that there's a five-hour line.
Oh, my gosh. and it was free comic book day, too, yesterday.
It was. I was sleeping most of the day.
So what? Besides, was there anything in LA that's worth going over? What was going on down there?
Well, I was down there for some filming, and I am very excited. I cannot wait to talk about what I was doing down there.
Ooh, a guarantees.
Yeah, we're gonna have to probably wait 2 or 3 months. Not terribly long.
Okay.
But it's gonna be very cool. When I was down there, I saw some movie stars. I saw some that I can't talk about yet, but I also saw Adam Sandler.
Really? Did you punch him in the face from me?
I had to show a lot of self-restraint not to deliver your message, Doug.
Where did you see him?
He was on the Sony Studios lot.
Okay.
And he was just like walking somewhere, and he looked kind of sad and dejected. You kind of felt a little bit bad for him.
He was reflecting on what he's done.
Awfully haggard. I'm sure he was off to make some really bad Netflix movie, and I just wanted to be like, no, you
stop.
Don't do.
Well, yeah, if he was on the lot, that means there is something in production.
Yep.
Good news, everyone.
There's more Adam Sandler to come. Yay.
So what about coming up in Portland this week? Is anything exciting happening?
I think Portland has had just about as much as Portland needs last week with the riots.
Oh, yes. Although we do have the freeway shut down today, the under construction, not because of a riot, but I-5 that goes past downtown is all closed right now.
Yuck.
Yes, yes. I just feel like I mentioned something. It's funny because we're recording this much after I just announced during the show that we're going to go to the, what was the thing that I mentioned? Oh, you appear in the Alaskan Airlines magazine.
I did. Yeah. That was funny. Reached into my seat back and pulled out a magazine, and there I was on page 115.
Oh, you didn't even know.
I did know.
Okay.
Thanks for a better story, Todd.
thanks for breaking the fourth wall there.
I just drove a bulldozer through the fourth wall on that one. No, but that's pretty cool.
There's this article on a short write-up on Portland bike culture, and they mentioned Filmed by Bike and the Unipiper and the Pedal Power Talk Show, amongst other things.
That's great. I always think about those magazines and it's probably like Parade magazine, how those are like probably the most read magazines in the U.S. because like there's nothing else to read when you're stuck up there and everybody reads those in-flight magazines.
Yeah, that's kind of funny.
Huh. That's pretty cool.
That's cool. Other Unipiper news this week on May the 4th, actually, the Oregonian came out with their list of all Oregon mascots ranked from worst to best.
Oh, so I'm imagining that the duck and the beaver are number 1, 2?
Well, actually, let's see here. The duck is number 11.
Oh, wow.
They did not give high praises to the duck.
Is now, what is the criteria that they're using here? Like just what it looks like or what it means or...
It just says that it's time for an official ranking. So the impetus for this article, Travel Oregon came out with a new Oregon mascot called the Travel Oregon Salmon. It's a giant robotic salmon that looks like it would be right in line with the Billy. Remember Billy Bass?
Yes.
Yeah, it looks like a giant Billy Bass. And it's a salmon, and it talks and sings. And they are releasing a series of videos, 360-degree videos, featuring this salmon talking about the wonders of the state of Oregon.
Oh, my gosh. I'm looking at a picture of Smokey the Salmon at the Willamette River, and he's wearing, like, a jaunty cap, and it's just this giant, weird-looking salmon costume.
Right. So they
That gave- is unfortunate.
They gave the salmon the next to last spot.
Who's last?
Last is the racist.
Tomahawk?
Yeah.
Oh, we're sorry.
The Bailey, racist Winterhawks mascot.
We can blame Chicago on that, though, because isn't that the Chicago Blackhawks logo as well?
Yes.
We mean it in honor and bravery and muscle. So yeah, so did you feature in this? I'm assuming is why you have brought this to our attention.
So rounding out the top three is
oh my goodness, rounding out the top three.
That's right.
The Unipiper is the unofficial Keep Portland Weird mascot of Portland.
Wow, that's pretty great. So what was number one and number two then, if it wasn't the sports teams?
Blaze the Cat. It was number two.
Who's Blaze the Cat
from
the
Blazers? Trailblazers.
Oh.
Yeah, which I don't know. That I think there should be something cooler than that for the Trailblazers.
Yeah.
And then Timber Joey was number one.
Oh yeah. You don't want to get in a fight with Timber Joey, I'm fully on board with that then. That is awesome though.
Not bad, I would say, considering I don't have a sports team to back me up.
Yes. I take that, Timber Joey. No, that's great, though. Good job. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, if people want to go and view the things that Portland's or Oregon's third most famous mascot is doing, where can they go?
Check me out on my website, unipiper.com. Also, stay up to date with the minute details of my life that I share on Facebook. Find me there or Twitter, Instagram, whatever your poison.
Sweet. And we'll mention this later in the show too, but next week we'll be doing our next episode of Portland at the Movies, which of course you will be part of that. So
that's right.
We will. Well, it was good talking to you. It sounds like you need to have another little nap before we start. We all start our first day of work again tomorrow. So we will talk to you later. It was good talking to you again.
Okay. See you guys.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, totally. Okay. Watson.
there's your segue.
Watson.
And Watson.
And Watson. So,
Watson, come here. I need you.
Nice. there is a problem that the world is experiencing, which is data. And data isn't inherently the problem. It is the quantity of data that we are gathering. And if we think of the escalation of the number of interactions that we have with our smartphone, with our computer, now with connected devices like my Fitbit that I wear, my scale is connected to the internet.
The internet of things.
It's the internet of things.
Your scale is connected to the internet.
Well, which has
I like how I will like there actually is a great justification for really, your scale being.
So I, my phone is literally being used to film this. On my phone is an app that's the Weight Watchers app, and you can track my weight because I have my morning routine.
Sure.
I take the shower, and once I step out of the shower, I get on the scale.
So
the scale
hard to write it down. Do you need your emotional support? Isabella.
Isabel Pug, come here. And so we are gathering data and photos and documentation and everything. There's old documents that are being scanned
history.
Yeah, our history is being added to the internet and to the databases of data. Mm-hmm. And I always... I love the word data because it's plural,
yeah.
But it doesn't
isn't the singular datum?
Yeah, a singular like a datum is one.
I barely knew her.
Oh wait, no, I barely knew him. I guess
datum. I barely knew him.
There we go.
And so I threw up a little chart on the thing,
yeah.
And this is from a couple years ago. And so right now, this was like a 2015 graph. And so we're further up the chart than does.
Yeah, the chart goes from 2010 to 2020, and it's a graph.
Showing the exponential increase in the amount of data. And so it separates it out and shows enterprise data, voice over IP data, social media, sensors and devices.
Okay.
And that red line is showing everything below that red line is data quantifiably that we aren't doing it. We don't have the capacity to do anything with. So it is called percentage of uncertain data, meaning it hasn't been evaluated or dealt with or categorized.
Okay.
It is just raw
data.
Like,
right. It's just like you threw everything into a barn.
Right. And so, then, yeah. And
exactly
so
like that.
Things like, the quantity of medical research papers, which we'll get into why this is practical. Like doctors don't stand a chance nowadays for having all of the data.
Right.
Because every single day there are new journal entries and new things. And so they're having to pick and choose the types of information or the flags or something needs to bubble up to the level that is important to them at the moment that they are reading it. But all of the other data is basically just being ignored, all of that research information. And so they don't have, and they couldn't have, all of the information about all of the research.
Mm-hmm.
So enter Watson. If you are alive on Earth, you probably heard of Watson, in that Watson is the artificial intelligent machine built by IBM that competed and won in Jeopardy against two grandmasters of Jeopardy. So Jennings and
Did he play chess Brent too? Like, has Rudder. How long has Watson been around? Because I feel like I've heard about
97
him
was Deep Blue. Deep Blue was 97, and after Deep Blue, which was also an IBM project, that same kind of group of people within IBM were like, okay, what's our next thing? And okay. So literally, there was a time where one of these developers was watching
Jeopardy.
And was watching, they were in a bar. The bar that it was in, kind of the sound level of noise in the bar curiously went away. And he was sitting there and then looked around, and everybody had gathered around the television and was watching Jennings
yeah.
win just crazy.
Again and again.
He was just... Jennings is just a machine. So Ken Jennings is, you know, undisputed Jeopardy grandmaster. Like, he just has so much data and able to retrieve that data quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so IBM set out and said, well, what if we could not win Jeopardy, but compete in that level of mm-hmm. being able to interpret a question, articulate, delve into the data, and then articulate an answer back. Mm-hmm. And Jeopardy is especially challenging. And so the questions themselves are posed as clues, not as questions. And many times the clues are pretty brief or obscure or obtuse or use a hyperbole.
Right. Or like a crossword puzzle clue.
Right. And so, you know, they're always very specific, but they're very much structured to use just not, it's not, let's straight. Do a keyword search on a database sure. and get this result because it won't happen.
Right.
And so Watson is a Q&A machine, not a traditional search engine. And so the difference is, the key difference between a Q&A technology and a document search takes a keyword query and returns a list of documents or a list of results ranked in order of relevance to the query. So when I search for sushi in Portland from Yelp, it is literally searching on a table of data that has the word sushi in it.
Mm-hmm.
And when it appears more times or has results that have a higher star rating or more reviews, it says, oh, this one's more important than that one. Let me sort that one to the top.
Hmm.
It didn't actually interpret, is this a sushi restaurant?
Right.
And do they serve good sushi here? It's just literally a count of data,
mm-hmm.
right? And so a Q&A technology takes a question expressed in natural language, seeks to understand that question, and then returns a precise answer to that question. And so when Watson played Jeopardy, it returned multiple results. Nope, that's the same thing that I just had. It returned multiple results,
my gosh.
With the likelihood of that result being the correct answer.
Okay.
And so for the clue, whatever the clue was, the obvious answer for this one was Maxwell's silver hammer instead right. of Frank Sinatra or Brown, right? And so
how in the world were all those related, I wonder?
I don't know.
Maxwell's silver hammer, that should be another game show. You interpret how Watson got to its own conclusion. Maxwell's silver hammer, Frank Sinatra, and Brown.
I don't know what the question, I don't know what the clue was that came up with these questions. And
I do like how they just put like a,
it's a screen.
It's a screen with the logo on it or whatever, which looks pretty funny.
Yeah. And so the screen had, it's a spinning, atom, okay. logo, and different colors meant different things. Like if it knew like solidly, this is the right answer.
Okay.
Then it came up green, and it had varying levels of red if it got things wrong or if it was not confident in its in its result.
Turned orange to taunt the other two players who the you brought up a little screen grab, and Ken Jennings has $200, Brad, whoever that is, has $600, Watson $4,000.
Right,
so he is creaming the two grandmasters.
And so Watson did win the match and won $1 million, and IBM donated that $1 million to charity. And so Ken Jennings and Brad, they came in close, and there were several moments like Watson didn't clear the field and didn't get 100%.
I was going to say, he got some wrong.
got some wrong or didn't get the right result fast enough.
Okay.
Right. Oh, and right. so, okay. And the results show that the fewer words in the clue, so the less detailed the clue was, the harder time Watson had in solving the clue.
Huh.
And so, so that was in 2011, and Watson got the first place. There were several restrictions placed on Watson to make this happen. So it the Watson computer was in the studios, not behind the counter, because
what kind of computer, like what is it?
What kind of computers?
What is Watson?
What is Watson? So the hardware is about $3 million worth of hardware.
Jeez.
It includes 90 servers. So it's got 10 racks of servers with 10 servers each and 9 servers each plus some other stuff. Each server has at least 8 cores per processor and had many processors per server. Each core had 4 threads. So we had 2,880 threads. And a thread is a single chain of logic or a single operation sequence. And so you basically like a worker, if you will. And so it has like 2,880 simultaneous workers doing things. I've got a pretty good MacBook Pro that's got, you know, 16 gigabytes of RAM. Watson had 16 terabytes of RAM. So that's 1,000 times as much RAM as my pretty decent laptop mm-hmm. has. It had all, it was not allowed to be connected to the internet or any external service. So it had to be fully self-contained.
Right.
So it took all of the data that it had, which included the entire contents of Wikipedia and a bunch of, you know, just everything.
Yeah.
Which reminds me, Watson was given one of the problems that it was having with natural language was like how to interpret slang.
Okay.
And so they pointed it and taught it from the Urban Dictionary. And
everything that came out of its mouth was filthy.
one of the legitimate responses to somebody's question was bullshit. and at that point, they all raised their eyebrows at once. It was like, so they literally had to extract all of the results from Urban Dictionary as part of it.
They had to delete
that little section.
I wish I could unlearn some of the things added I learned on Urban Dictionary.
And they had it. They added a filter to prevent profanity.
That's funny.
From coming out, and wash its mouth out with.
They realized after everything, it would say,
"I barely knew her."
It's actual quote
That's
from
actual
Watson.
Quote from Watson. 16 terabytes of RAM. It can process 500 gigabytes of data per second.
Sheesh.
So that's about 1 million books of information every second. So if you are teaching it a new skill, you can throw 1 million books of information at it per second.
Good grief.
And it will consume that information and receive that and be able to use that intelligently in its information gathering, in its responding. But it's only at all this power and all of the capabilities. There's a list of the 500 most powerful supercomputers in the world. Watson only comes up to about half as fast as the bottom of that list.
Holy cow.
So there are computers that do things faster, but Watson isn't about speed primarily.
Right.
It's about the neural way.
Language and understanding.
The language and understanding. Exactly. And trying to interpret meaning from things.
Right.
Exactly. And so the win from Jeopardy. So basically, you teach Watson by giving it questions and answers that have already been processed, so that it can interpret and gather that information. And sometimes there's conflicting things, and it has to weigh the data and say, okay, right. Well, if there's two things that point to this and one thing that point away from it, then the two overcome the one, or this is a more credible source because of all of these things about that source versus this one guy in the corner who
right.
said it.
Well, or it's just like I was at Sunday school this morning with the 3-year-old class that I teach, and I can't think of the exact example. I was overhearing it, but we asked the kids to pick something up off the floor or something like that. And it was a homonym word that, you know, meant two things. And the little kid hadn't heard the new term before, and you'd had to take that step and say, no, not that one, that kind of whatever I just said, you know, the other kind.
Yep.
So to teach them the difference between those two words that mean the same thing too. That's interesting.
So we point Watson at data. It gathers that data, and that's literally what it did for Jeopardy. And it won. It won hands down, and won $1 million. And everybody was surprised and alarmed,
right.
and excited.
Well, because I mean,
terrified.
All of the stories and like all of my experience with things like Siri or Alexa now, 99% of the things you ask, I'm sorry, I don't understand the question. I don't know,
right.
whatever. And
right.
it's just like completely pointless.
Right. And that's because of the fraction of the computing power that's necessary to get the nuance of language.
Yeah, the difference between trying to look something up and understanding meaning.
Understanding meaning and context and how it gets that and all of that. And so after it won Jeopardy, they didn't have a direction to go specifically. They knew there's a big list. You can sit here and brainstorm for 5 seconds and get a list of where to go next. But
right.
they really sat back and paused. And as a team, we're like, well, what is the next place to go with Watson? And cancer research is where they chose. And they came to this from calls that they received after the Jeopardy episode from doctors. Because as you can see, the question was asked, or the clue was given.
Mm-hmm.
Watson came up with a list of possibilities and then chose the one that it interpreted as being the best option, mm-hmm. which is precisely what a doctor does. Mm-hmm. I've got these symptoms, this history, I've got this question, if you will, and here are my options, and I am ranking them as a skilled physician.
Right.
And so their questions were like, well, are there more than three options? And the answer is yes, there's thousands, yeah. and we're just showing the top three.
Yeah.
How did it weight those things, and how did it come up with an answer, and when can we start using wow. Watson for cancer research? And so they literally sent Watson through medical school, through the documentation of medical school. Wow. And the teachers of medical school provided the types of information and the types of question and answers that you build at going through doctor school.
Now I'm just picturing the movie montage right now of just Watson sitting there in a room, and like there's all stuff, graphics flying past it, or whatever.
The 80s music. Then the medical training facility that they were working with were like, we want to do this, but we don't feel ethically able to do this on real humans that are going through this now. So what they did is they took the backlog of 200 cases that had already been diagnosed and dealt with and properly diagnosed. So sure. we had 200 cases that were known entities.
Okay.
Now let's take away the results side of all of those cases and just give Watson the symptom side of the case.
Okay.
And see what Watson does.
Yeah.
Right. 199 correct answers and one that was off. Right?
Wow.
And so everybody's like,
Dr. Watson, paging Dr. Watson.
Paging Dr. Watson, right? And it was phenomenal. And the teachers of the medical school were like, hooray! You know, like we didn't fail.
We taught it, yeah.
We taught it. And so they basically built a tool that reads the patient history and then starts to come to some recommendations and says, it asks more questions that will help diagnose or further diagnose an issue, and starts to make some recommendations around treatment or studies that could be used for this. And it shows the references that were used to make these conclusions.
Good grief. Right?
And because of the sheer capacity of information that it has at its fingertips, including everything that was published
ever
yesterday,
jeez.
Right? Which isn't available to everybody who's in the medical field, just because you can't keep up with that
right.
amount of,
yeah,
of,
yeah.
of data. As new reports are published or new findings made or new, even treatments, the result of treatments going back into the system of real time from real patients is part of that cloud of information.
Wow.
It then gives some recommendations. So now any nurse that is using it, 90% of the nurses that have access to Watson hold it to an esteem that is usable and functional, and they
wow.
they use it in coordination with their diagnoses
sure.
and with their practice. And it we
does
are,
everyone have access to it? I mean, is it like a subscription model type
yeah,
thing?
I don't know I'm sure it's a subscription model kind of thing, and it's limited use in certain little cancer diagnosis currently, and the most like rare, weird,
sure,
strange cases,
right,
that don't have very clear answers.
Right.
And so with that approach, and so I watched a video that gives a demonstration of the iPad app, basically, mm-hmm, and the process that you would go through as a doctor. And so like initially based on some cursory information, Watson then asks, you know, did they cough up blood? And that helped to take a reliability from 48% to 90% of what the next treatment is.
Wow.
And so literally the day previous, the patient had coughed up blood and
that's crazy.
It's incredible leverage of technology for an immense amount of data that's necessary to make the most complex result findings.
Right.
Right. And
right now, all we have is WebMD telling us we have cancer.
Which cancer do you have? WebMD. Like,
my fingernails are growing. It's cancer.
It's cancer. I laugh because it's funny. Like,
cry because you actually have cancer.
Cry because
you didn't believe it because you found out on WebMD.
Right. And so other applications. So now that's actively being used and refined and expanded the use of. So I went on to the IBM Watson website, and there's an API that if you become a partner with IBM, you can have access to the cloud version of Watson, yeah, to tap into. And so they...
Just for medical stuff or for entertainment purposes?
No, now purposes? You would have to be a partner with IBM, and so, sure, you'd have to have an application that is part of their, okay, roadmap, basically.
Okay.
And so things that are being used practically right now, this last year in 2017, H&R Block engaged with Watson to process taxes. And so now, are you getting all of the deductions that are possible for your situation?
Right.
Well, there's just a few tax codes.
Yeah.
There's just a few rules.
Literally,
and loopholes.
Only a supercomputer can figure it out.
And they have, you know, many, many thousands of customers and all of their specific scenarios. And it's just very much like a medical diagnosis. And so that is actively being engaged. I went on to the H&R Block website, and sure enough, they have a whole page about how Watson can help you through H&R Block get the best return on your tax return. Additionally, cold cases in law enforcement. And so there's no lack of old cases, yeah, that, you know, you hear about the detective that I wanted to find out. And so I opened up the old case and I read through all of the clues and, yeah, I finally put the dots together. Right. But there's just not enough humans that have the time and the experience and the depth of knowledge and the, right, all of the parts that are needed to make that happen.
Yeah.
Watson is and has that. And so you point Watson at law enforcement and you say, learn law enforcement, and it consumes a million million books a second and learns law enforcement and all of the history of detective work, and now is a super detective. Now he's Batman. And so he can take these cold cases and start to ask some very pointed questions. Well, did you look at...
Shining a lamp in people's faces. Where were you on the night of the 5th? Watson, calm down.
Where were you at the night of the 5th? And...
Murderer.
I barely knew her.
Exactly. And... Let's see. Wow. So other things, weather forecasting, same exact situation. Anything where you have a massive data set, history of information, and open-ended questions of what if, or how will this, or mm-hmm. what is this, any kind of Q&A that you're trying to do. So healthcare, weather forecasting, tax preparation, and law enforcement are kind of the next outward-facing steps that they're taking. Mm-hmm. But I guarantee that's just tip of the iceberg of
Do you think this is considered a... Is it a specific program? Is it a type of program? Does that make sense? Like, it is a learning thing and it has the ability to learn. Is that a function of the way it's programmed, or is that a function of a set? I guess I don't know how to ask that question correctly.
Yeah. So, you know, it took 3 years for engineers to develop the hundreds and hundreds of algorithms on both sides of the equation of how do I consume data and organize it in non-structured ways. So mm-hmm. a traditional database works very much like an Excel spreadsheet where you have multiple tables of data and each table is just like a sheet in a spreadsheet. And so it has rows of data and each row has columns of information. So
even explaining Microsoft Excel is boring.
It really is. So if I've got a list of employees, then I've got a sheet that has all the employees' records. That would be a column for first name, column for last name. So instead of storing data that way, it stores it very, parses the information and then builds a hierarchy of that parsed.
Right. So more like our brains as opposed to,
It's a neural network exactly like our brains.
I don't like that at all.
Exactly.
I was on board until that sentence.
Exactly. And so there's a lot of implications. There's a lot that we are just starting to scratch the surface of. We have not seen the last of Watson and the derivatives of Watson. Watson's just one that we know about from Big Blue, from IBM,
right?
That has prominence, but you can guarantee that every significant tech entity has an R&D department that is doing crazy things like this. And I can point you at the link to Wikipedia to download the contents of Wikipedia. It's a link. You can just do it.
But the universe ends, so do be careful with it. It does reduce everything to a singularity.
Totally. And so this data is available to everyone ultimately. And so I see our coming months and years to be wildly interesting in like how to solve medical problem. Like how do we make teeth whiter? I mean, anything that we can ask as humans, that we can point at data to, we will be able to, address within this neural, linguistic English understand, natural language understanding. You'll be able to ask natural language questions and get wildly accurate answers.
Wow.
Why are we
That's
here?
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were, kind of finishing up some research before we started and you just kept like shaking your head in like awe and terror at what the future is going to be.
Right. And this is a theme of the Mark and Todd cast recently, as we've talked about CRISPR and AI and robotic cars and 3D printing. And we are at such an interesting time in history that in our lifetimes, we will see the start of the wildly changed world.
Yeah.
That
worlds
that
I mean, we're gonna be in Mars in a couple of years.
Yeah,
that's crazy. So yep. No matter what dystopian future this all brings you, make sure to continue to listen to the Mark and Todd cast. You can go to markandtoddcast.com or facebook.com/markandtoddcast. You can find all our old episodes. Right now, the Willamette Week is doing its Best of Portland thing. So nominate us for Best Podcast in Portland.
Yeah. Who well,
I don't think it works that way. No,
it doesn't.
We're getting, no. So we're getting a call right now.
Right
now.
Right now, you can vote on those that they have nominated.
Oh, already.
So the nominations
chosen.
Are already done. So,
Well, then vote for Fun Employment because I think they're
up for
it again.
Vote for Fun Employment Radio. They are the best podcast in Portland
they
right
are
now.
Best Portland podcast.
And next year, nominate the Mark and Todd cast and Portland of the Movies. And
for best live feed podcast
with no
half, with 45 minutes of buzzing audio at the Mark and Todd cast. But speaking of next week, we aren't doing a Mark and Todd cast, but we are doing our next episode of Portland at the Movies. So do stay tuned for that. Our movie is, I want to keep saying Fatal Reality, but it's not. It's called Total Reality, which is by the same guy who did our last movie, Fatal Revenge. So it'll be pretty great. So stay tuned for that next week, both for the live feed probably on Sunday and then the upcoming week for the edited show. Ooh. I'm distracted and I just found Watson Computer Composes Music. Because one of the things we did watch beforehand, Watson put together a movie trailer. I'll write that down to post that. And so we watched a movie trailer that Watson did for a movie called Morgan that came out last year, a horror movie. And we watched that and then we watched the actual real trailer. And Watson's trailer, way better.
I loved it.
It hinted at the movie. It showed a little bit. It looked, and then we watched the regular movie and it was like super formula, walked you through the entire movie in 2 minutes. So like you knew what was going to happen. Yeah. It was so interesting.
Yeah. And Watson's was like 30 seconds, had eerie music and gave you the vibe of the movie without revealing the movie. And, I wanted to see it, and then we watched the real trailer, and I'm like, "Oh,
was this the same?
I understand this movie now."
Was this the same computer? I don't know if we had if we read the story that it wrote.
Wrote the music. No, it was.
It wasn't the music. It like wrote dialogue for a short movie.
It made a totally AI movie.
It's not. All right, this I'm gonna have to cut some of this out because it's I'm gonna click on this. It's called hashtag Happy Beautiful Year, and I believe this is a Chinese pop band called Watson. So we will go see you guys next time on the Mark and Todd cast. I give up.
Bye.
This is bonkers.
Bye.
Oh, bye, Mark.